I'm Katie McGrady, and this is Ave Explores. I think it's okay for us to admit that Lent is sometimes hard. I'd actually be more worried if we were to sit here and say that it wasn't difficult. Oh yeah, Lent is going real well. And that's maybe precisely how you know that Lent is not challenging enough for a particular person. That's not to say that we have to put ourselves through the ringer, that Lent is just this long to-do list of spiritual mortifications and challenges so we can say, I'm the most holy. But it is to say that if Lent isn't at least, you know, marginally challenging, if we feel like we're succeeding at Lent as if we're winning Lent, then maybe we need to ratchet it up a bit. We need to challenge ourselves a touch more. Or we need to invite the Lord into the moments and say, what more can I do to reveal your glory? This past week, I was in Mexico City on pilgrimage, and I was kneeling in front of the tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe in the Basilica, just kind of had a pew all to myself for a little while. And I couldn't get over the fact that here I was in this incredibly holy place. There's the Blessed Sacrament in the Tabernacle. There's the tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Right down the plaza is the tomb of St. Juan Diego and his uncle Juan Bernardino. In the shadow of the hill where our Blessed Mother appeared to Juan Diego. And as I'm sitting in there, all I kept saying kind of over and over and over again was, thank you. Thank you for bringing me back here. Thank you for being here yourself, right? Like, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Mary. And I very vulnerably in that moment thought to myself, golly, like what a perfect time to come here in the season of Lent. What a gift. Almost in that moment felt a little spoiled. Like I got to spend some of my Lenten season in the shadow of Our Lady of Guadalupe on a pilgrimage to spend time learning her story even more in a season of penance and a season of trying to grow closer to Jesus. And so I asked as I was kneeling there, Lord, what more can I do in this Lenten season? What more can you invite me to? What more can I embrace as I'm not just on this pilgrimage, but throughout the entire season of Lent? And very clearly, and I hated it. I hated the answer. But very clearly, I heard, why don't you not drink any Mexican Coke on this trip? Now, I'm going to make a point here that might seem a little ridiculous. I love Mexican Coke. It's made with real cane sugar. It comes in a tall glass bottle. It is a luxury. And here I was kneeling in the Basilica, and I feel Jesus is saying to me, I want you to give that up. I want you to make that sacrifice on this trip. And I kind of fought back. I was like, no, I'll give up regular Coke back home like normal. But on this trip, like, I'm not allowed a little bit of a treat. Like, I'm walking with all these pilgrims on this journey, and it's a lot of work, and it's very hot, and these are long days. And like, come on, like, let me just have the Coke. And I heard it again very clearly, give it up for me. And I felt so weak in that moment. I felt like such an impoverished Catholic loser because I'm battling with Jesus about not wanting to give up this very simple thing. But it was a challenge. Maybe at this point in the Lenten season, Jesus is challenging us in a very specific way. He's inviting us to rest in his goodness and to let him be made more perfect in our Lenten experiences. And that even when it is challenging and hard to maybe give up that extra thing or to add that prayer or to be generous in a particular way, that's right when the Lord is going to show up. We had the great joy of sitting down with Sister Oriane from the Daughters of St. Paul, just an incredibly talented woman and an incredible gift to the church in her service with the Daughters of St. Paul, the Media Nuns, as they're sometimes called. And she shares with us really a beautiful meditation on what it means to trust the Lord in the season of Lent. And how the Lord really wants to know us intimately in the season of Lent and sometimes asks us to grow closer to him by giving up these things that we're maybe very attached to, by praying a little more than we would normally have the time for, by being generous and serving others when it really does stretch us out of our comfort zone. This is all part of our Ave Explorer series on Father Agostino's incredible Lenten book, Made for Heaven. Grab a copy over at AveMariaPress.com. But for right now, sit back and enjoy this incredible conversation about how Lent reveals our weaknesses and God's strength. Sister, welcome to Ave Explores, a first-time guest for us. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you so much, Katie. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. You're all the way up in Canada, and I'm all the way down in Louisiana. So my first question, Why are you in Canada and what led you to the Daughters of St. Paul? Tell us about yourself.
So I am in Canada because I'm stationed in Toronto right now. Mm. I am part of a missionary order. So the Daughters of St. Paul are missionaries. We're in 50 different countries across the globe. And because we're in 50 different countries, we're kind of divided into, like, we call them provinces. So it's either by geographic connection or language connection. So the US and English-speaking Canada are one province. And because I entered the Daughters from Canada, I'm part of the USA Canadian province. So I can be stationed anywhere. It's like being in the army, right? You get posted. So I'm stationed right now in Toronto. I entered the Daughters of St. Paul in 2017. And it was really after a period of a lot of questioning of what God's will was for my life. But I wouldn't have said that religious life was on my radar until I was asked by a priest if I had ever considered a religious vocation. And I had not. So I'm grateful that he asked, or none of this would have happened. So, yeah. And as missionaries, we're really like communications missionaries. Mm-hmm. So we are dedicated to proclaiming Jesus Christ, bringing Jesus Christ to people, the good news to people, through the most modern and effective means of communication. It's really excited to be joining you on one of those effective means.
Yeah, in the podcasting realm, which is a modern means. I wonder if Blessed James Alberioni, the founder of your order, ever expected podcasts to be a thing. Like, he was a very forward-thinking man. He knew radio is a big deal, but now, like, on-demand radio is wild. What was it that attracted you specifically to the Daughters of St. Paul? A priest says, have you thought about religious life? Like, this is not an obscure order. People know who you guys are. Y'all are the ones who I buy all my encyclicals from because I love the way y'all print them. But there, it's a very specific mission. What was it that attracted you?
You know, actually, so I had never heard of the Daughters of St. Paul. I'm really, really glad you have.
Well, I discerned with them. I thought about them for a time. Yeah.
Hey. Very connected, Katie. That's awesome. No, I grew up in rural Canada. Like, the Daughters of St. Paul weren't physically present. And I wasn't big into social media at the time. Like, it just wasn't really on my radar. But I found them online on a Google search. And
I think
what really attracted me initially to their order was both the fact that they were so much themselves. Like, you could really see how God was sanctifying the personalities that he had given them, rather than, like, you know, feeling like you had to fit a mold. Like, you felt like you could be yourself there. But also their spirituality actually attracted me even before the mission did, because they had this really profound spirituality of bringing the whole person to the whole Christ and the whole Christ to the whole person. And that just meant so much for me. Because I love our devotions to Jesus Christ, his sacred heart, you know, like his sacred face, all those things. But like, I couldn't just pick one piece of him. Like, I wanted all of them. And it was so profound to me to be able to see the spirituality that really sought to bring all of who he was to all of who a person was. And I kind of gradually was able to see from that why that really required a mission of communication, of really being able to communicate who Christ was in his fullness to people where they're at in their everyday lives in their fullness. So it was an ongoing process, but I'm so, so grateful that I found them. Thank you, Google.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a modern means of communications led you to the nuns that do that. I love what you just said. The whole person seen and loved and known by the whole Jesus. Like, there's not a fragmentation or a segmentation, and not that either other orders do that or the church does, but I think we do that. Like, yes, oh, Jesus gets this part of me, or I want that part of Jesus that's maybe a little more approachable, or I like that particular story. We just had the story of Jesus flipping tables as our Sunday gospel. And like, I love angry Jesus. He's one of my favorite ones. I don't really like Jesus who like looks at you and says, this is what I need you to stop doing in your life. Like, I'm not a big fan of that Jesus. Do you find it hard to communicate that in a modern world that does fragment people? Like, there's different versions of us depending on where we are, whether it's online or in person or in certain circumstances. And to stop that fragmentation and bring this gospel message, is that difficult? What's the challenge there?
I think it's a really good question, Katie, because I think we do fragment ourselves. But I think we always have. It just, the amount of spaces, so the amount of fragments may have escalated, but I think we've always done it. And it's one of the effects of sin, right? But I think that there's such a longing and a desire for authenticity, for sincerity, for you to be yourself. And we try to grasp that in so many different ways. And often those ways end up being kind of destructive, like fragmenting us even more. But we're looking for it, we're yearning mm-hmm. for it. So if we can start from that place of this natural, good desire to be fully ourselves, regardless of who we're speaking to, and to be able to be safe being fully ourselves, that is what God allows us to do, and not only allows us to do, but is calling us to do in himself. And only he can really like reveal all the layers of who we are, because they're kind of hidden in him, right? So if we're able to start from that place of true good desire and kind of build out from there, we can meet people exactly where they're at, regardless of where they happen to be in their own journey.
Is Lent the perfect time to do that? Like, do y'all ramp up your mission and ministry in Lent because everybody's kind of thinking about that already?
Yes, I think Lent is very helpful. And I think one of the realities is when you're fasting, when you're praying, when you're challenging yourself to be generous and serving others, your heart is more open, right? Like there's actually a physical difference for you. And that is so important. Certainly not limited to that, but I would say like a really fruitful season, because you're stripping the ground of all the stuff that might prevent the seeds from landing. And that can be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. What does Lent look like in a convent? We asked this question of Father Agostino at the beginning of the season. You know, the friars are a little intense. I call them the cowboys of the Catholic Church.
I love that.
What does it look like for you guys?
Well, obviously, for every convent, it's different. For us, for our order, I mean, it's still a season of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. So often we will add additional prayers. Many communities may pray like an extra set of the Liturgy of the Hours that we don't usually pray mm-hmm. beyond morning and evening prayer, because most missionary orders can't pray all of the hours. And the church gives us permission for that. But it may also include things like particular fasting or penances that are done, or fasting, I should say, that are done together communally. Mm-hmm. And obviously things like no meat on Fridays, that's like a given.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's really beautiful to see even within the community, what communities choose to do together, whether it's a small house or a big house of six sisters or 80 sisters, you know, mm-hmm. or what individual sisters take on for themselves, kind of recognizing their own poverty or maybe their own struggles in living out community fruitfully and saying, okay, so that I can be more present to my sisters in this season, or so that I can listen more radically to my sisters in this season, I'm going to, you know, whether it's giving up social media or limiting something in our lives that's supposed to be part of our lives as communication missionaries, mm-hmm. but almost kind of like challenging ourselves even there to a different type of radicality within mm-hmm. the confines of what we're called to, of course, within our charism. And then when Lent is over, kind of be able to give more radically when we go back on social media or when we go back to whatever else it is that we may have stepped away from during yeah. that time.
Yeah. When we lack in one area, it's like if you're blind, you hear better. If you're deaf, you see better, right? A different sense is amplified. Yes. Interesting. That was an attempt at a segue into...
I saw Jesus, it. I see what you did
healing
there.
Healing a blind man. Yeah, the cough kind of ruined it. but I mean, what do you, as a religious sister who spends time in scripture, as a communication sister, I'm sure you listen to Bible in a year. I think the whole world did. This particular story is kind of a challenging one that Father Agostino digs into. Fourth Sunday of Lent, happy Sunday. But then it's, I wouldn't necessarily say this is a happy gospel. Something mm-hmm. positive happens. Like we get a healing. But it's not necessarily the easiest of stories because there's challenge there. Talk to us about the blind man who's healed by Jesus. What do you think is going on in this story? And what does it mean to us today in a fragmented world where we're looking to be loved as our entire whole selves?
Mm. For me personally, there's two things that super stand out in this story. The first is that question that the disciples ask of Jesus when they first see this man who was born blind, right? It wasn't from an accident. He was just born that way. And they ask him, like, who sinned that this happened to him, right? And I think that is so resonant with our culture today because we always are looking to put the blame on somebody, mm-hmm. you know? We're looking for blame for everything that has gone wrong. And Jesus really challenges them on that, saying, like, look, this isn't about blame. this isn't about like something that you can feel victimized by or like mm-hmm. fall into a victim mentality when anything wrong happens to you or anything difficult happens to you. This is so that the glory of God can be revealed in him. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're able to step back and look at our wounds, our lacks, our limitations, our personal poverties, and instead of, I mean, obviously they are wounds, lacks, you know, poverties, like it's natural to see them as such because that's what they are. But rather than lamenting them and falling into this victim complex and saying, oh, poor me, woe is me, it's all your guys' fault. Like to be able to say, Lord, reveal your glory in me through this poverty, like Paul says, like in his letters when he's kind of quoting what Jesus said to him in prayer, that the power of the Lord is made perfect in weakness, right? In our wounds, in our limitations, in our lacks. When we have those things that we have to face and they're difficult to face, like to ask the Lord, reveal your glory in me, work through this, because I know you can. I can't, but you can.
Right.
And he can bring miracles out of that.
Yeah. Well, and that's so Lenten. I just got back from a pilgrimage and I gave up sweets for Lent. And if there's one thing I love in Mexico, it's Mexican sweets. Like they've got this little like chili candy. Uh-huh. And so I bought a bag to set aside for Easter and like had a wrestle moment with myself on a bus ride through busy Mexican streets. Like, I can just have one. Like, come on. Like I went and visited Our Lady of Guadalupe. I can just have one. And like was fighting the temptation to give up on my Lenten fast and felt weak, like felt like such a terrible loser. I didn't have the candy. I resisted.
Congratulations.
I will enjoy it on Easter Sunday morning. But in that, and I felt so inadequate. And I was like, this should not be that difficult. There are like people suffering in front of me on these streets as we're driving through Mexico. And all I want is this chili candy. But like the Lord can do something even with those little sacrifices or those little weaknesses. You said there was something else that really stuck out to you, the story.
Yeah, there's one other thing. So the thing that I was so struck by is the fact that, you know, the blind man, it's several point in this story is asked to identify the person who healed him, right? Mm. But he hasn't seen his face. He hasn't seen his face. And it reminds me so much of Psalm 27, where David is crying out to the Lord, like, do not hide your face from me. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things that moves me the most about that until like way down the story, and I don't think it's actually dealt with in the actual mass reading, but he does meet Jesus. He does see his face.
Right.
For blind people, for people who are blind or severely visually impaired, the only way that you can experience someone's face is by touching it, mm-hmm. right? You feel the contours of their face. That's how you know what they look like, right? Even though you can't see it. And what is the first thing that Jesus does to him? He touches his face. Mm-hmm. That is how he heals him. And I just, it like moves me, like I get emotional because like the way that we know that we are seen, Jesus is using the only way that this man can know that he is seen to show him that he is seen, that he is known, that every bit of him, every feature of him, every hair on his head is known. He touches his face.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's in that knowing that he is healed. And then later on, visually, has the opportunity to see him face to face.
Yeah.
But I just find that so moving because, you know, Jesus knows how we process information. He knows how we respond. He knows what we can see in a given moment, what we can't see. He always finds a way that he knows we are open to, whether or not we accept it is another story, but he always chooses ways he knows that we can hear or we can see or we can touch mm-hmm. to reach out to us. And this is like such a profound and moving example of that to me.
Yeah. When it's a little, I'm not going to use the word violating because that's not what Jesus does. It's very intimate. Like, it's like he like shoves his hands in this guy's face the same way that the man would have to touch Jesus to know what his face looks like. Like, Jesus is not afraid to get very personal.
Yeah.
Even if it makes us uncomfortable, even if it like, I don't know, I might flinch back if Jesus were to come at me with his hands. But then every Sunday, right, like we literally consume him. So that's pretty intimate, too.
Yeah.
You know, real casual, like he's already touching parts of my heart and my soul and my physical body. And there's something that Lent specifically does, I think, that like you said, strips away. It burns off all that excess. It reveals that very, very personal part of us that Jesus wants to come to and transform and change. We're wrapping up Lent. We're on Laetare Sunday, which is they'll wear pink this Sunday, just like an Advent. We get we get a happy weekend. It doesn't mean we like all cancel our fast for the coming week, but it's like that little hint of, okay, we're almost to the end. We're getting closer and closer to Palm Sunday, which seems wild. It feels like Lent just kind of has flown by this year.
Yeah.
If somebody were to bump into you, let's say, you know, in the Toronto subway or they, you know, they saw your habit on campus and they came up to you and said, "Sister, my Lent has been terrible." Mm-hmm. What would you tell them? Or if they like look at you and they're like, "Yeah, it started strong, but it, I don't know, a fizzled. I don't know what I'm going to do for these final 2 weeks." Like, what's your word of encouragement, your word of hope for somebody who wants this Lent to be a point for Jesus to touch their face, for Lent to really transform them?
I think actually that's one of my favorite questions is when people are like, "Oh, my Lent sucked. Like I messed up my Lent." Because there is no greater fruit of the season of Lent than to recognize our own poverty. There is no greater fruit. And if that's all you got out of it, you got out of it one of the most important lessons. Because in recognizing our own poverty, we know what we need to bring to the Lord and we know what to ask Him into. And we know that we have to rely on Him. It kind of shifts our focus back to putting Him at the center rather than ourselves. So, I mean, then it worked, right? Your life worked.
Good job, right? Like you did it. Yeah.
Good job.
I love that. Yeah. No, it's so, I mean, this is, we're actually, so most of our podcasts are recorded well in advance of like when Lent actually is. So we always have to kind of pull this, I'll pull the media veil back. We have to pull the like, "Oh, how's your Lent going?" and pretend you're in the future. But like we are recording this week 3 of Lent. Like we are launching this in 5 days.
Yes.
How has your Lent gone so far?
My Lent has gone great in the sense that I am recognizing my own poverty.
Good answer.
Which means it's been rough. But that means it's good.
The lentier the Lent is, the better it ends up being.
Yeah.
Sister, tell us a little bit about where we can find the good work of the Daughters of St. Paul. I know you'll have a podcast. Tell us about that.
Sure. So our podcast is called Dare to Dwell, a podcast with the Daughters of St. Paul. It's really just kind of focusing on that like radicality of God dwelling with us and what that means for our everyday life. And obviously, we're also on social media and YouTube. And if anyone wants to check us out for our mission, our charism, or vocational purposes, they can go to daughtersofstpaul.com.
Awesome. Sister, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
You are most welcome. Thank you so much for your ministry, Katie. God bless you and all your listeners.
Amen. I think one of my favorite things about this particular Ave Explorers Lenten season has been how so many different people outside of the show have enjoyed Father Agostino's book. I've gotten emails and Instagram messages and Facebook messages and people saying this book is changing my Lent. And then, of course, when they're listening to the podcast, hearing the perspective on some of these themes and these ideas, I was really, really grateful for Sister Anne telling us about Jesus's intimate approach to us, where he touches our faces, where he touches our hearts, where he gets up close and personal to know us. It occurred to me shortly after she and I finished recording, you know, Jesus doesn't get to know us simply because he's bored. He doesn't have anything better to do with his time. He gets to know us because he wants us to know him. Jesus knows every hair on our head. He knows the thoughts of our heart. He knows the challenges that we're struggling with. He knows what we do and don't like about the Lenten season. And he doesn't necessarily have to come close to us to know that. He's omnipotent. He's God. But he does come close to us. He does get into our lives and personal with us, because in so doing, we come to know him. You know, Jesus could have healed the blind man by snapping his fingers from afar, but instead he goes right up to him and touches his face. Jesus could give us his presence by just, you know, shouting from a cloud, "I'm God, believe in me," but instead he becomes tiny and small and crumbly, and makes himself in the form of bread, and accidents of bread and wine reveal to us the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ. Lent could just be this spiritual boot camp of praying a rosary every day and taking time for the Stations of the Cross and, you know, reading a reflection book at the table and calling it a day. But instead, it's this walk through the desert that reveals to us, oh my goodness, I'm made for heaven. Lent is actually a preparation for eternity. I was really grateful Sister Oriane brought that to light in our conversation. The Daughters of St. Paul are just an incredible apostolate and ministry. Check them out at their website. We have a link down in the show notes. They're doing a really incredible fundraiser right now in collaboration with the Sisters of Life, where you can buy a collection of books on the Daughters of St. Paul website at their store, their Pauline Ministry store. And those books will be shipped directly to the Sisters of Life to give to women that they serve in their pro-life apostolate ministry. So two of my favorite religious orders, the Daughters of St. Paul, the Sisters of Life, collaborating together to serve women is an incredible and very easy way to alms give this Lenten season and serve people who need the gospel and who are seeking the gospel out. So go check out the link down in our show notes. That'll give you a little more information about that incredible service project that you can participate in this Lenten season. We'll be back next week for week 5 of our Lenten journey, talking about the Eucharist in our Lenten journey and how the source and summit of our faith helps us understand the full purpose of Lent. We're so grateful that you joined us today. We'll see you soon right here on Ave Explores.